Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radio
from
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
Okay, hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and we have two stories today. Two stories, same idea, totally different stories, but the same, but different.
And located in totally different places. We're going to take you from America to South Korea. From
politics to pop.
Politics to, yes, to pop music. And what unites these tales is a basic, really, journalism question. When reporters report a story, we ask, well, how much can I say here? And when folks read or listen to a story, they have to ask themselves, well, how much do I want to know? This business between want to say, want to know is a very delicate arrangement.
It's right. And these are two stories where that arrangement got rearranged in really interesting ways.
So we're going to take you back to an evening in 1987. Tom Fiedler, ace political reporter for the Miami Herald, he's in his office.
At my desk and just, in fact, packing up to go home. My phone rang and I'm thinking.
When he picked up the phone, it was a woman's voice, maybe in her late 20s. And she said to him, I have something you need to know. It was a tip about one of the most powerful and charismatic men in American politics, former Senator Gary Hart, who at the time was not only the most likely candidate to become the Democratic nominee, he was very possibly going to be the next president of the United States.
Her words to me were, Gary Hart is having an affair with one of my best friends.
And she told him, basically, I can prove it.
And, you know, I was rather, I guess, dumbstruck by that.
And he thought,
well, now what do we do?
Now, if you're of a certain age, you probably remember this story, but even if you've never heard of Gary Hart, you still probably know the outline of this story. The accusations.
Congressman Anthony Weiner is a Democrat from New York.
Elliot Spitzer.
John Edwards.
Then the denial.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
And then after that, the whole wall-to-wall media thing.
Sexting scandal.
Prostitution scandal.
Which just goes on and on and on until you want to take your head off your shoulders, put it on the sidewalk, and beat it with a baseball bat. But the thing that's easy to forget is that it wasn't always like this.
No. Hart was the first to walk into this vortex of social forces.
That, by the way, is Matt Bai.
National political columnist for Yahoo News.
He wrote a book about this incident, which he called All the Truth Is Out.
And in that book, he makes the argument that this is the moment, Gary Hart, 1987, when political journalism slid off the rails. Or, you might argue, finally got serious.
Well, you know, just flash back a minute, because I think the context is important.
1984.
Hart kind of comes from nowhere.
It's a whole new ball game in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Runs for president, storms New Hampshire.
Senator Gary Hart is on his way to a clear-cut victory over Walter Mondale.
Beats Mondale there and becomes a political celebrity.
This country cannot stand four more years of Reaganomics for the rich.
Hart was this tall, good-looking Democrat.
He's got great wavy hair.
I mean, dashing, handsome, charismatic, and young.
This is Leslie Stahl.
CBS.
She's covered politics for 40 years now, works for 60 Minutes.
He was cool and smart. Women liked him, too.
He's an anti-Orthodox Democrat, very liberal, anti-nukes. He is sort of the Bill Clinton before Bill Clinton.
He doesn't get the Democratic nomination in 1984. Walter Mondale does by a nose, but
fast forward to 1987.
Like it or not, campaign 88 is underway.
And
the leading contender,
frontrunner Gary Hart in New Hampshire,
he's winning.
On to the White House.
He's running double digits higher than any Democrat.
And he's projected to beat George Bush, the Republican frontrunner.
The next president of the United States, Gary Hart.
It felt like, look, this is a guy
who is changing politics, who is unafraid to speak the truth.
That's Kevin Sweeney. He was Hart's press secretary in 1987. He joined the campaign just a few years out of college.
I knew pretty early I wanted to work for Hart.
Do you remember why?
He was really liberal on social issues at the time. Unafraid to be specific or take a stand. I
mean, he said Hart placed an extraordinary amount of emphasis on not just winning the campaign, but what would they do when they got in office. So they wrote out all these position papers on foreign policy, energy, international trade, the budget.
There was something about Hart and something about what happened on the campaign where it did feel like the kind of campaign that I haven't seen since.
And when does the subject of what goes on below the belt come up, if at all?
Well, there were rumors, definitely rumors.
By this time, there are a lot of whispers about his personal life and a lot of speculation. He's been married to his college sweetheart, Lee, for a very long time. They've been separated twice, the long separations. And during those separations, he's dated openly in Washington. So it's a well-known fact of life that he's dated. Nobody wrote about that.
And the reason they didn't write about it was because of a very old, very well-established convention.
I mean, look, go back through the 20th century. Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, Dwight Eisenhower, towering figures. Their personal lives simply were not in play.
Take, for example, JFK. Leslie Stahl says that when the press was covering him,
vast numbers of reporters knew that John Kennedy was cheating on his wife, but we wouldn't have dreamed of printing that.
I think the feeling was that, so what? You know, we all get to have a zone of privacy.
And the assumption was that what happened in your private zone behind closed doors
had nothing to do with whether you were going to be a good president or not.
This is the world that Hart still thinks he's living in, that as long as it doesn't burst into public view, it won't be a story.
But Matt Bai says that world was actually changing because of a political earthquake that had happened just over a decade before.
Talking about the Watergate break-in.
Burglarizing and bugging Democratic headquarters in Washington.
That is the big first knocked-out brick in that wall.
Five people have been arrested and charged with breaking into the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee.
You know, arguably the biggest scandal in White House history. You had Nixon tapping phone lines, compiling enemy lists. And for the reporters covering Nixon,
it really is an embarrassment. You had an entire White House press corps who had followed this man, Richard Nixon, for decades and somehow either missed the fact or failed to report the fact that he had some significant psychological issues and could be corrupted.
I think there was a sense that we let the public down.
Leslie Stahl remembers it this way.
The regular White House press reporters, they should have been digging. They should have been looking behind the curtain. And so right after Watergate, reporters became tougher, saying, okay, we have to be skeptical about everything.
And in particular,
the character issue.
Meaning suddenly
your makeup, your personal behavior, who you are in your private moments matters a whole hell of a lot for the kind of president you can be and whether or not we can trust you as a public leader.
Hart's character is the subject tonight of our Weekend Journal. In this day and age, candidates' personal lives are getting a great deal of scrutiny.
I remember there was a bit of a shift in the kinds of reporters who were covering national politics. They had a different orientation, and they were really interested in the character question.
That's Kevin Sweeney again. He says he was initially frustrated by a reporter's strange obsession with things that were not really issues, important issues in the campaign.
Like age. There was some confusion about Hart's age, the fact that he changed the family name, his signature changed at a certain point in his life.
He says when those stories initially popped up,
I thought it was a false set of issues. I didn't really take it seriously.
But then when it came to the rumors of marital infidelity, he felt like he needed to talk to Gary Hart.
I did say, if anything is happening, it needs to stop. I mean, this can't, whatever it is. I mean, and he said, you know, nothing is happening. And he shot back and said they have no right to cover that. That's ridiculous. It's not an issue. That, you know, why is that an issue? That's not their job. And I kept pushing back saying, I don't actually care what their job is. I don't care what you think their job is. This is the new context that exists now. The rules have changed.
So this
brings us back to Tom Fiedler of the Miami Herald. He was covering Gary Hart, going with him to all the stops in Iowa, New Hampshire,
and so forth. And it seemed like at every stop along the way, some reporter would raise her or his hand and would say, what about the rumors of his womanizing?
So on April 27th, 1987, he wrote a column asking the question,
is it ethical for journalists to be even raising this kind of a question? And I really came down to the conclusion that unless the media, unless the reporters involved had actual proof that this was a problem, that he was a womanizer, we just shouldn't be printing that.
Column runs on a Monday morning.
That night,
he gets the call.
The voice on the other side says, Gary Hart is having an affair with one of my best friends.
He was dumbstruck, as we know.
I told her that my position had to be that I couldn't believe what she had to say unless there was proof. And finally she said, my friend is going to fly up to Washington next weekend, and she's going to spend the weekend with Senator Hart. She said, so all you have to do is buy a ticket on that plane. And I thought, well, what is in bounds and what is out of bounds?
But Fiedler thought, well, no. This is in bounds.
So my view at that point was, if in fact there was proof that he was carrying on an affair privately while publicly insisting that there really was no basis to this, then that was a relevant issue.
Relevant to his performance as a future president?
Yes. It was a question of integrity. So we thought the only way that we are going to find out if what the caller told us is true is we've got to catch him.
So his editor tells a colleague of his, Jim McGee, to go to the airport telling him,
this is what you're going to do. You're going to look for a woman who looks like a model.
That's how the woman on the phone described her friend.
She's described as a model, blonde, in her mid-20s, and call me back if you see it.
So this guy, Jim, races to the airport,
spots this attractive young woman, fits the description, who of course we later knew was Donna Rice.
So he boards the plane, they land in D.C., he follows her out of the airport into a cab.
He runs to another cab, jumps in it, and he says, follow that cab.
Just like the movies.
Which they do.
He loses her for a while, but then eventually he gets to the house where he thinks Hart and this lady should be.
And he's not there more than a few minutes when the front door opens, and out comes the young woman on the arm of a very handsome man.
One small problem.
Jim had never met Gary Hart.
He had no idea what Gary Hart looked like.
He said later, he said, I really couldn't pick Gary Hart out of a lineup. That's when I really thought, we have got to go to Washington.
And that's what they do. The Herald.
Matt Bye again.
They send a team of reporters, investigative reporters, and Fiedler and a photographer to Washington.
We arrive Saturday morning.
They stake out his townhouse.
You know, I'm thinking, my gosh, somebody will surely notice that there are four or five of us. Lurking is probably the right word.
It's May, and one guy's in a parka to disguise himself. And Fiedler, who the candidate knows, is in a jogging suit, and he's pretending to jog around the street all day long.
I would change clothes a little bit. Occasionally, I would run without the jacket. Other times, I would just be wearing a T-shirt and shorts.
And he'd run around and around and around.
It's not how the CIA would do it, but it's about what you'd expect from a newspaper.
Our quote-unquote stakeout went on all day into Saturday night, and it got dark. And then front door opens.
Hart walks out with Donna Rice, sort of arm in arm.
He quickly realizes something is wrong.
He kind of makes the surveillance. They see him, he sees them, he turns her back around, they go inside.
Go back inside the townhouse.
He sends her away through the back door.
And then he comes back out of the townhouse.
Hops in his car.
And starts to drive off. So our photographer starts to chase Senator Hart's car.
He drives a couple blocks.
Up streets, down streets, back and forth.
He gets out of the car.
Walks through a park.
Chase continues on foot.
He knows they're following him, and they know he knows they're following
Hart
him.
Hart ducks around the corner. They lose him for a second. Then they're running to catch up.
And then
they turn a corner in an alley, and there's Hart. There is the presumed nominee of the Democratic Party, the most important Democratic politician in the country, and they're confronting each other.
And for a moment, standing in the alleyway behind Hart's townhouse, they just stare at each other. Because there is no script for this moment.
ultimately to, he asked, well, who are you? Well, we're from the Miami Herald. And he didn't really say anything. So I told him that we wanted to know why he was meeting with this woman in his townhouse, a woman who, at that point, we knew had spent the night with him.
He says in myriad ways, myriad times,
I'm not going to tell you who that woman was. This is private. This isn't public.
But he says there's no affair, which he would maintain forever after. And ultimately,
he said, I've said enough. And he turned and walked inside and slammed the door. We did tell him, though. He said, we're going to write this story unless you give us a reason as to why what we are seeing and what we're concluding is wrong. And he never did that. So we kind of look at ourselves and said, well, now what do we do? Ultimately, the call was, we have the proof we feel we needed. We know that publicly he was saying these things, and we now know that privately he was engaged in this.
So they ran back to the hotel room. Fiedler frantically typed out the story.
Gary Hart, comma, whose presidential campaign has been dogged by rumors of womanizing, comma, spent Friday night and much of Saturday with a woman who came from Miami to meet him.
The only thing that gives me pause is if, you know, under this standard, you'd lose Jack Kennedy, certainly.
Yeah.
You'd lose Woodrow Wilson, I think. So.
But, you know, you've leaped to the conclusion that the public would banish a person for that, and I don't go there.
Hmm.
So are you worried about how it's going to land?
That's our producer, Jamie York.
Terrified.
And the next morning,
an ABC News read,
the political world explodes.
Democratic presidential hopeful Gary Hart.
Gary Hart.
Gary Hart.
It truly became a firestorm.
The Miami Herald reports today that Hart, quote, spent Friday night and most of Saturday.
The Miami Herald reports that Hart and a Miami woman spent Friday night alone together
in his Washington townhouse with a young woman.
That story begins ricocheting around the country
on CNN.
So by Sunday,
confronted by Herald reporters last night,
Hart denied any impropriety.
Hart denied any impropriety.
It's very apparent that not only is Hart in trouble, but the entire culture of media around politics has changed in some very dramatic way.
And when you think about the mindset of the television people, the radio people, the newspaper people, is there any self-doubt there? Is there people saying, is this really a question of his ability to conduct matters of state?
Mm-hmm.
Is that question being asked?
There's a tremendous amount of self-doubt.
Not everyone agrees that such intense public scrutiny is necessary.
There was widespread feeling.
The Miami Herald was put on the defensive.
That what Fiedler and his colleagues had done was wrong.
You know, that's out of bounds.
What business is it of the press?
You staked out a guy in his home?
What are they up to, sneaking around in the bushes and all that?
A lot of reporters don't think it's relevant. And one reason is this. Nobody knows where this is going to lead.
Has this set a precedent?
Should reporters be staking out George Bush's house, Bruce Babbitt's house, Joe Biden's house?
But then in the same breath, there's generally this sense of, but you know.
All he had to do basically was stay clean.
What was he thinking?
Hart is to blame. It's Gary Hart's fault.
And didn't he understand that things had changed? And doesn't the public maybe have a right to know?
And so the newspaper that began the controversy is not backing down.
So there was a real conflict. All of the various echelon of media respond to this differently. The New York Times refuses to touch it originally. The Washington Post is deeply conflicted.
And as for the public,
in an unscientific Herald telephone poll, 63% of the callers said they thought the paper was making too much of a fuss over Gary Hart.
I mean, the polling shows that people think the media overstepped. He's still polling very strongly. He's winning in the public mind.
According to Leslie Stahl, most people seem to be willing to compartmentalize.
Most people can split off. How's he going to be as president? And, you know, is he cheating on his wife?
So Hart and his team try to get ahead of the story. They schedule a press conference in New Hampshire. And on the flight over, Kevin Sweeney, his press secretary, preps him.
I remember asking Hart a question, something like, have you ever been unfaithful to your wife? And he shot back at me with anger. He said, I don't have to answer that question. That's a question that I can answer to God, to my wife. But it's not a question that I need to answer in politics. That's a dangerous question to be asking. We don't want to go there. And I just said, that's a great answer. Just hold that anger. That's an appropriate response. Senator Hart, please. We get to the press conference.
There are lights everywhere.
The room is filled.
It's sweaty. It's hot. There's more media than anyone's ever seen packed in.
It's a really intense environment.
Hart has very little buffer, and he's handling the questions.
How are you going to convince him that you're not going to make this kind of mistake in judgment about personal behavior again?
Really pretty brilliantly.
I won't tell him. I'll demonstrate it. As time goes on, people are going to want to know about your judgment and your character on the issues that affect their lives and their families and their nation. That's what this campaign is going to be about.
He's kind of firing on all cylinders.
And Hart goes through, 30 minutes, 40 minutes of questions, and then...
You raised, in your remarks yesterday, you raised the issue of morality and you raised the issue of truthfulness.
At some point, he calls on a young reporter named Paul Taylor.
Very specific, and I have a series of questions about it.
And Paul Taylor walks him through a series of questions.
You said you did nothing immoral. Did you mean that you had no sexual relationship with Donna Rice last weekend or any other time you were with her? That is correct. That's correct. Do you believe that adultery is immoral?
Yes.
Have you ever committed adultery?
He says, Senator, have you ever committed adultery? No politician had ever publicly been asked that broad, direct a question about his personal behavior. It shocked the room.
We don't know what Gary Hart was thinking in that moment. He did not want to be interviewed on tape. But it's clear that if he said yes or no to that broad of a question, then his entire married life, because have you ever committed adultery, that word ever, his entire married life would suddenly be in play.
And Hart stumbled around for a minute, and ultimately he says,
I do not have to answer that question.
I don't have to answer that question.
That's right.
And I think
when I heard that response, I felt it. It felt like defeat. And I was offended. I really, in that moment, thought, this is just wrong. This has nothing to do with what is necessary to run this country. And I just thought, we're not going to survive.
And that moment effectively does him in.
Senator, I have told you the facts. You don't believe me. There's nothing I can do about it.
Senator Hart,
one second. What are you?
Gary Hart is finished as a presidential candidate.
Gary Hart's formal campaign is only 3 weeks old.
There was simply no putting the genie back in the bottle.
His appearances yesterday were mob scenes.
The Hart campaign has been hammered to its knees.
Asking the same questions again and again. Today, after what may be remembered as the most disastrous week any presidential candidate's endured in years, Hart told an aide, let's go home.
Now, according to Matt Bai, you can look at this whole story, and particularly Tom Fiedler taking that call, and Paul Taylor asking that question, as this moment when all of these forces way outside of Gary Hart's control come together, not just to sink his campaign, but to change political journalism profoundly. But just for a gut check, we put the whole story.
We're talking about Tom Fiedler?
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah.
In front of this lady.
I'm Cokie Roberts.
But no, like who you are, like part two.
I'm a political commentator and author.
Okay. Cokie Roberts believes that, yeah, reporters were interested in character more after Watergate. But it wasn't just that.
The thing that's important to keep in mind here is that there were many more women covering candidates at that point than there had been before. There were women on the bus. And in the case of Gary Hart, several of those women had had personal encounters with him. So this was not somebody that women who were covering campaigns were ignorant of. And the other thing to keep in mind, Robert, is that the whole women's movement did talk quite a bit about the personal is political. And because the way women were treated was something that we thought, and I continue to think, is a good gauge of character. And there was something of a sense that he treated women like Kleenex. So we were expanding the universe of what was a major character flaw.
So then are you kind of rooting Fiedler on?
Or? Oh, absolutely. Finally, somebody's written about it, and thank God it's a guy.
But it, as much as you were cheering them on, was there any concern that that was changing the rules of journalism?
No.
Why?
Because the rules of journalism were constantly changing, as they should.
And according to Cokie Roberts, this was less about journalism changing than about journalism catching up with the ethics of the time.
Look, we elect our presidents based on who they are, not on what policies they stand for. It's different from any other office. The voters need to know as much as they can humanly know about that person.
So is there a line for you? Is there a place you won't go in taking the full measure of a candidate?
I not for president that I can think of.
There's nothing you wouldn't touch?
No. I mean, I'd have to know that it was true.
Sure.
But no, no.
I'd intended, quite frankly, to come down here this morning and read a short, carefully worded political statement.
This is Gary Hart's statement a few days after that press conference.
Saying that I was withdrawing from the race and then quietly disappear from the stage. And then after, frankly, tossing and turning all night, I said to myself, hell no. I'm not going to do that because it's not my style and because I'm a proud man and I'm proud of what I've accomplished. In public life, some things may be interesting, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're important. We're all going to have to seriously question the system for selecting our national leaders that reduces the press of this nation to hunters and presidential candidates to being hunted. Politics in this country, take it from me, is on the verge of becoming another form of athletic competition or sporting match. We all better do something to make this system work. We're all going to be soon rephrasing Jefferson to say, I tremble for my country when I think we may, in fact, get the kind of leaders we deserve.
Now, we did reach out to Mr. Hart for comment, explaining to him the story we were doing, and he wrote back this response. Thank you for your letter and the invitation to participate in your current story. Though I did not become president, my life continues to be extraordinarily rich. Perhaps someday someone will tell that story. But for now, I have no interest in revisiting what many consider a turning point for the nation and a few an injustice. I do believe that the full and accurate story of that event remains to be told. Signed, Gary Hart.
Very special thanks to Jamie York, our Jamie York, and to Joe Trippi, and to Matt Bai. You can find a link to Matt Bai's book, All the Truth Is Out, The Week Politics Went Tabloid, on our website, radiolab.org.
This piece was produced by Simon Adler, and I guess that's pretty much it.
Coming up, we're gonna move from politics...
to pop.
To pop, yeah.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Radiolab is supported by Babbel. Sometimes self-improvement can feel like a pretty overwhelming journey. So what if this year you just got a tiny bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with quick 10-minute lessons that have been handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. You can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, café, s'il vous plaît, from vocabulary words to culture and more. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a few months or a full year. Here is a special limited-time deal for Radiolab listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/radiolab. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/radiolab, spelled BABBEL.com/radiolab. Rules and restrictions may apply.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab.
And we are now going to, as promised, jump across the ocean and ask the same question. When reporters write stories, we have to figure out, well, what do you want to know? You have to...
Yeah, how much do you want to know? And you have to answer that when you pick up the paper or turn on the radio. But now the context is not politics anymore.
No, now it's music.
Yeah. And to help us with that is reporter Alex Lee Young. Ready?
I'm ready.
Where should we begin?
Well, we're going to start with this woman.
When I tell my friends about it, I kind of describe it as a prison, but it's a prison you decide to walk into.
Okay, so this is Sarah Wolfgang.
I was a former trainee for a K-pop group in Korea.
Sarah is Korean-American. She was born in America.
But I actually grew up in Korea. My parents both worked for the military.
And you were living in Seoul?
Correct.
Okay.
And when I was in high school,
about 15 years old,
I think maybe 10th grade,
her headshots ended up getting passed to a South Korean record company.
And when we received the phone call, they were like, oh, hey, you want to come in and audition for a K-pop group? So I went in, and then they're like, okay, they put me in front of a camera, and they asked me to sing. And I'm not the best singer.
But that doesn't seem to matter to K-pop.
Nope. Everything, you know, can be touched up.
To make a long story short, they end up offering her a contract.
Of more than 5 years.
And as part of that contract,
we were asked to move into the dorms.
The what?
There are these facilities that all of the agencies have for their idols and training.
They described it like a boarding school. And so I moved in the dorms with 6 or 7 other girls.
And it was here that Sarah says the company basically kept them under lock and key.
Well, they didn't lock us in there, but we weren't allowed to leave.
Wait, why is she doing this again?
Well, bang, bang, bang. Bubble, bubble, bubble. Let me explain to you guys just like how phenomenally huge K-pop is.
Okay.
K-pop actually started in Korea in the early 90s. But like in the last 5 or so years, it has just spilled out into the rest of the world. And by some estimates, it was generating like around $5 billion a year. And nearly all of this is based on a kind of fantasy.
Because K-pop stars are, you know, products of fantasy world.
That's Professor Sukyoung Kim.
Theater studies at University of California, Santa Barbara. You know, stars, they have to have just surreally beautiful face, beautiful body, you know, excessively long legs, broad eyes, pale skin, flowing hair. They are not the creature of this world. They shouldn't be. You know, they can only exist in fantasy world.
In that fantasy, that's what they're trying to manufacture in those dorms.
Like, they wanted us to lose weight, so we would wake up at like 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning and then go hiking.
Sarah says after the hike, they'd come back, eat breakfast.
Which usually consisted of lettuce.
Then they'd have dance classes, singing classes.
And then we had lessons of, I think they're called like humble lessons.
Where basically this guy would show up to the dorm.
And he would teach us to bow correctly. So like we would have to bow in unison so that we seemed as like one big happy group.
They weren't allowed to have cell phones.
No.
Computers.
Nope.
Or a relationship of any kind.
All companies pretty much don't want you to be in a relationship.
And in fact, Sukyoung told me that in 2011,
that one of the members of 21, which is a girl group, managed by YG Entertainment, revealed that their management said they should not be dating before age 29.
What?
Oh my God.
They shouldn't be dating because stars belong to the public, to the fans.
And that was a thing. It was like a purity thing. You know, that pure, angelic, virgin Madonna image.
This, by the way, is K-pop writer AJ Park,
editor-at-large at soompi.com. Like girl groups, they used to call them like nation's fairies. You know, they had this pure, chaste image to them. And the boy bands, too. Because that being single makes them more marketable and appealing.
The founders of K-pop knew back in the early 90s that the fans would love the stars even more if the stars weren't just beautiful and perfect, but they also seemed somehow available.
Wait. Is that all that different than America? I mean, American celebrity culture has fantasy woven in too.
Of course it does.
Yeah, but there's a big difference.
In Korea, that fantasy world, it is so extremely controlled.
Way more than in America, according to Soo Kyung Kim. And it's controlled not just by the agencies,
but by the fans, to the extent that it defies all of our common sense.
What do you mean?
I'll give you an example. This one I heard from Professor Soo Kyung Kim and also writer Leslie Timbaco.
I'm the editor-in-chief of Soul Beats.
It's a big K-pop, K-entertainment site. Okay. 2008, there was this new girl group.
Girls' Generation.
Called Girls' Generation.
Girls' Generation is a 9-member all-girls group that was like appearing on like music shows and like variety shows, being promoted as like the girl next door, all cute, and, you know, like the ideal girlfriend kind of idea.
And Leslie says that on some of these shows, Girls' Generation would appear with boy bands,
you know, who were also promoting at the same time. Groups such as Super Junior, SS501, and DBSK. Okay, so these three groups in like various shows, they would be like standing next to each other on stage, talking to each other during variety shows.
And some of the fans thought that the Girls' Generation girls were flirting with some of the boy bands. Oh. Like, you know, these little sidelong glances or teasing them.
And so that interaction, seeing that, fans were very, very, very upset about that. And so all the fans of the three groups,
the three boy bands,
got together and decided to do a Black Ocean.
What is that?
We're going to get there.
Okay.
Fast forward to June 7th, 2008. All of those bands that were on those TV shows are playing this big K-pop concert.
This event called Dream Concert.
A huge stadium show, like more than 40,000 fans. And
in the concert,
Soo Kyung told me that there's one thing you need to know about fans, about K-pop fans at live events. They all have light sticks.
And they come in different colors.
Because each band has its own color.
Super Junior, for example, has blue. And when they appear on stage, you see the sea of blue light sticks waving in support of their stars on stage.
So they played for a while. And when SS501 comes out, the whole place just turns to light green. Show goes on. TVXQ comes to the stage, and then up go thousands and thousands of these ruby red glittery lights. And at some point, Girls' Generation takes the stage. And here's the thing. Pretty much as soon as they walk on stage,
all the people in the audience turned off their light sticks.
What?
Suddenly, there was blackout in the whole auditorium.
Everybody stops clapping, screaming, silence.
Were you saying like the whole, like everybody, 40,000 people?
Yes. And if you look up pictures of it, it was a stadium performance. The entire stadium was black.
No way.
Yes way.
Girls' Generation had to sing and dance to this silent crowd.
Well, how on earth did they pull that off? How could you get this many people doing the same thing?
Okay, so the way that these shows happen, at least at these dream concerts, is that different sections of the auditorium belong to different fan groups.
Oh, so they sell it as zone seating.
Right, so the fan clubs actually get to, like, dole out the tickets. And during the show, there's this moment where some of the fan club leaders stood up and held up these signs that said, "Quiet."
Dude.
This is that upsetting.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a second. If you would allow me to frame for a second.
Sure.
So what have we learned so far? We've learned that this is a global phenomenon.
This is
phenomenon.
A nightmare, is what we've learned. It's a total nightmare.
It's a global phenomenon born of the nightmare of these stars who seem to be tightly held in check by everybody, the fans, the agencies, everybody. That's what we know so far. Okay.
And this is why I wanted to do this whole story in the first place. Just a couple years ago, in walks this guy. And he just messes everything up.
네, 라디오 랩 강일은입니다.
We sent an interpreter with a mic over to the Gangnam district in Seoul to speak with a guy named Lee Myung-goo. But, you know, he told me to call him Mr. Lee.
Are you guys ready?
Yep. Okay, so here's the story.
Sportseoul.com 같은 경우에도
in the early 2000s,
연예 스포츠를 다루는 그
Mr. Lee, he was working at a news organization called Sportseoul, which did all kinds of things, not just sports. They also did like business and entertainment.
나중에는 연예팀뿐만이 아니라 뭐 경제.
He was actually in charge of all the online news. And while he was there, I think it's fair to say that he took his reporting very seriously. Like, he always had this idea in his mind.
네, 원칙론적으로는 보도할 수 있는 모든 뉴스는 보도돼야 된다고
생각. I believe any contents that can be published, that's possible to publish, should be freely published. That's the kind of culture that would be better to have.
So he was a guy who believed in an independent press. But he also knew that there were certain things that he just couldn't report on.
한국 사회에서 정치를 하는 건 근데 제가
that certain subjects like politics
너무 위험하다.
Were just dangerous.
Why?
We actually need to back up a little bit, put this into a little bit of context.
Okay.
So between like after the Korean War, between say the 60s and the 80s, South Korea was under a series of military dictatorships, and there was basically a censorship of the press. Things got a lot better in the 90s when they turned to civilian rule. But even today, the government still has a branch that goes around the internet and deletes websites for their content. So this is like the world in which the press is living in.
보수적인데 이렇게 판단할 거잖아요.
So getting back to Mr. Lee, it's 2010. He's at Sports Seoul having dreams of independence.
그러면 독자들은?
And he feels like politics is a little tricky. So he does what to me feels like a little bit of a Trojan horse move.
자유로운, 네, 자유로운.
Basically, he says, if I can't do independent reporting in politics,
네.
I'll just sneak it into celebrity news.
So
별다를 게 없었어요, 한국 언론계에서는.
So we looked on the internet for Hollywood news and media in the UK. And looked at what they were doing.
Hey, Brittany.
Finally, are you pregnant?
So he studied The Sun, Us Weekly, TMZ.
Wait, he studied TMZ?
That's what he said. You know, how they take their pictures. How close do they get?
Because there was a
paparazzi.
Paparazzi in Korea. And we decided to apply that to South Korea.
Their first target were these two stars. Jonghyun, who is an idol from a boy band called SHINee. Huge band, and an actress. Her name is Shin Se-kyung.
그게 가장 유력하게 취재할 수 있는 D-Day를 정해서.
First, you have to go through the information gathering process.
So they tailed both these stars on and off
for 1 month.
Whoa.
To get a sense of their movement patterns.
You know, and they figure out they have this pattern of meeting up in front of her apartment really early in the morning, like 3 a.m. or something, and they take these walks. So, late October 2010, one of Mr. Lee's reporters stakes out the apartment, and the two stars meet up to take their walk. And you get the very first paparazzi photos, as far as we know, in Korea.
Huh, what do the photos look like?
Well, I think they're so cute. It's these two idols, you know, walking down the street, hand in hand, under these yellow streetlights. And they just look like they're in their own little world. There's this one photo where he's pulling back her hair, and I think he's putting like an earbud in her ear, and they're sharing a song, they're listening to a song together.
Aww.
He's got her purse on his shoulder, you know, he's just holding her bag for her.
And what happens when the photographer guy runs up and goes
No.
In their face?
Well, the guys at Sports Seoul kind of drew this line. They're like, we're gonna keep back a distance from the celebrities.
Oh, so there's a silent click, click,
yeah,
click coming through a car window.
Right.
Do they see the guy?
No, they don't. And that's why these photos, it's not like that typical like hands in the face photo. They just look totally serene.
But this moment, these two innocents are truly innocent. They have no reason to expect anyone to be out there at all.
Right, because, you know, before this moment, there weren't paparazzi photographers stalking celebrities like this.
This is Eden right here. This is Eden.
Yeah, this is
just before the fall. Let's move on to the fall.
그 디페시를 만들어 가지고 창간한 시대가 2011년 3월이거든요.
Mr. Lee said right before they published, all of the reporters got together and stayed in the office all night. And everybody was on pins and needles because, you know, they didn't know. They didn't know what was going to happen. Are people going to be outraged? Are they going to be totally excited about this? They just had no idea what was going to happen.
And you also will have no idea what's going to happen until after the break.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Radiolab is supported by Babbel. Sometimes self-improvement can feel like a pretty overwhelming journey. So what if this year you just got a tiny bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with quick 10-minute lessons that have been handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. You can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, café s'il vous plaît, from vocabulary words to culture and more. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a few months or a full year. Here is a special limited-time deal for Radiolab listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/radiolab. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/radiolab, spelled BABBEL.com/radiolab. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Jed, Robert, Radiolab. Back to our story from reporter Alex Young.
So when we left off, we were talking about Lee Min-gu, Mr. Lee. He and his team had just captured the first paparazzi moment in South Korea. They had taken a picture of these two stars. They were just about to publish. No idea what was going to happen.
And when we first published them,
people went crazy.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
The photos went viral.
There was an incredible amount of web traffic. So much that our servers were breaking down.
So people clicked.
Oh, yeah.
At first, they just, you know, they just inundated the website trying to look at these photos. But then they rushed over to the fan sites. And four of the websites from the boy band, the guy, crashed. Shin Se-kyung's website, it just gets flooded with comments.
Numerous vile comments about how the fans felt betrayed.
People were like posting defaced pictures of her.
In typical sexist ways, she got the brunt of it.
You know, when I talked to Lee Min-gu, he was the first one to recognize that.
굉장히 좀 당황하는 편이죠.
Usually when this kind of scandal breaks, it's the woman who gets it worse.
Yeah, yeah. So how did the agencies respond?
반응은 실시간으로 이제 알 수 있다는 거죠.
Shock.
In the beginning, could tell that the companies were not prepared. Because their official statement would be like, we need to talk to the celebrity. Or we had no idea this was going on. And you could see that the companies were struggling.
There was actually, you know, a couple times later on where, God, the fans got really crazy. And they would actually protest at, like, their live shows or whatever. And then pretty much the next day, like, after the protest, the idol at the center of that scandal would just kind of vanish. Like, they would just take an indefinite hiatus from all of their, like, promotional activities.
Like, you mean, like, the agencies just yanked them?
I mean, yeah, that was the suggestion, yeah.
Did the agency say anything about that to you?
No one would go on the record with me, but I did talk to some people over email. And they said that, you know, when fans react this way, they're kind of forced to take drastic action.
So they kind of confirmed that they were disappearing idols?
They confirmed with me that they were taking action. But here's what ends up happening. Lee Min-gu says, you know, that very first scandal that they broke, yeah, they got a lot of backlash, but it showed them
that what worked in the foreign media could also work in South Korea. So it gave us strength to keep experimenting.
So in 2011, Lee Min-gu and like a couple of the people from Sportsoul, they break off and they form this company called Dispatch. And then the following years, 2012, 2013, this is really important chunk of time where they just start pumping out scandals.
You must have done more than 10 stories, small and big. Do you want to hear the list?
I do want to hear the list.
First off, there's Park Ji-yeon. She's dating Mr. P. Then there's Buhara, who's with Junhyung. Then there's Taekyeon, who gets caught with Jessica. Rain dating Kim Tae-hee. Then you have Yuna dating Lee Sung-gi. Sully and Chizu, that was like a crazy one. And of course, we all remember Baekhyun and Taehyun.
I don't remember.
Oh, I remember. But according to Sookyung Kim, you had so many scandals in such a short period of time.
Headlines after headlines. At such a frequent rate that we fans became somehow desensitized by this news.
It shook us. And I'm going to put myself in there now, yeah. It shook us.
According to writer AJ Park, what you saw after this crazy onslaught of scandals is, well, a couple things. So the paparazzi
became a trend, something that all the Korean entertainment news started picking up.
There starts to be all these other paparazzi companies that come out.
Competitors?
Exactly. Just like Dispatch, but with a different name. But the craziest part, I think, is that you start seeing celebrities tiptoeing out and telling the truth about their lives.
Little by little, the celebrities would get more comfortable about revealing it themselves.
For instance, in 2012 on this talk show,
Kwang Hee, who is a member of this K-pop boy band, he made waves because he explained that celebrities date in cars.
And I think that the audience reaction is like super telling because you can hear it in the tape. They're laughing.
So he's breaking the spell. And what you'd expect is,
yeah.
What you get is
casual laughter.
Well, so that's a sea change.
That's a real sea change. So yeah. And this happened in just 2 years, you're saying?
We probably have to say 5 years.
Yeah, but still, I mean, if that's... See, this actually does make me think... I mean, well, first of all, it's interesting to think of paparazzi as liberators. In this
totally,
case.
Totally, totally.
Because we're used to thinking of them as like scum.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you pan out, here's literally the thought I'm having. Like, there's a tendency, because we're dumb Westerners, to sort of see what happens in places like Korea as being very different from us, like culturally separate.
Yeah.
But to hear that they change that quickly makes me think in some way that we're all very similar.
Hmm.
Or maybe we're all headed to the same place, and like tabloid is the great equalizer, and maybe we were all going to just end up... all of us in post-Kardashian hell. Like, literally, like, this is how far they traveled in 5 years. And literally in another 5 years, you will have the Kardashian family of Korea.
Right, right, right. Like,
just
like
dishing
it'll just
all
keep,
the time,
the
making
keep...
sex tapes on their own, whatever it is.
I also thought the same thing, you know, being from America. You're like, well, this is just inevitable. But I actually don't think so anymore. AJ told me a story that really changed my mind.
It was like, it was our Watergate, it was our K-pop gate. It changed everything.
This story, it revolves around
A-Lee!
This one young female solo artist, A-Lee. She's just hugely popular. I mean, they actually call her the Korean Beyonce. And in 2013, she was just killing it. By this point, A-Lee has a couple albums out. Her YouTube videos have millions and millions of views. But then, November 2013, a bomb drops. This guy cold calls dispatch. Mr. Lee actually picks up, and he recorded this phone call. And the guy tells him, I have nude pictures of A-Lee.
What is he exactly is he asking?
So he's calling dispatch to see how much these nude photos are worth. And Mr. Lee tells him,
근데 이렇게 그 받은 사진을
we don't want your photos.
돈 받고 만약에 넘기시면은
and then if you keep listening to the phone call, you can hear him
주시는 거 상관없어요. 우리한테 안 주셔도 되고 누구한테 주셔도 다른 사람한테 주셔도 뭐 파셔도 상관없는데
start getting really upset. Like, this is not right. You're crossing a line. So to make a long story short, dispatch turns down the photos. And the photos somehow make their way to a competitor's website.
This one American K-pop website
called All K-pop,
who was pretty big. They were probably the number one K-pop site at that time.
In the world?
Or for English speakers.
For English speakers. And they published the naked picture?
They're the ones who publish the naked pictures.
Can't remember if they censored it or not, but if they did, it wasn't a very good job, like you could see.
So the photos come out, and what would you expect to happen?
Some anger, maybe, a little bit, and then basically people just click on the pictures?
No. Instantly, the entire K-pop world bands together, Black Ocean style, and just comes out against all K-pop. The agencies, they start threatening to sue. This competitor website starts this boycott. And in just a few days, the figure was like 22,000 Twitter followers just stopped following them. Really, their reputation just tanks.
It was a warning to them, you know, don't mess with us. And so they really haven't, I haven't really followed them in a while, but they haven't recovered since then.
But what I think is the most surprising part of this is just 3 days after the photos come out was the night of one of South Korea's biggest award ceremonies called the Melon Music Awards. And, you know, scheduled for that night, A-Lee was supposed to receive one of these top 10 Artists of the Year awards. And I think to everyone's surprise, she actually showed up.
Melon Music Award top 10.
And about 2 hours in,
과연 누굴까요?
A-Lee! 축하드립니다.
2013 Melon Music Award top 10. 마지막 주인공은 A-Lee입니다.
You know, they call her name, and she stands up, walks to center stage, goes to the presenters, she takes a bow, and she looks, I think she looks fraught, or at least overwhelmed. But then she faces the crowd. At one point, her face kind of cracks. She puts her head in her elbow, and she starts crying. She says, it really means a lot to me that you supported me, that you believed in me.
믿어주시고, 사랑해주시는
despite everything that's going on.
모든 분들과 그리고 저희 팬분들 너무 사랑하고 감사합니다.
Thank you.
열심히 하겠습니다.
And then she walked off stage. For me, this story shows that they're gonna draw a line in the sand that's different from ours.
I mean, culturally, Koreans, we're a little more strict. And also, I think there's also a part where we look at the U.S. and we're like, come on, guys. You know, like, we see them as an example of let's not totally go there. Yeah.
So, like, the U.S. is a cautionary tale or something.
Yeah, like, don't ever get to that point, guys.
And maybe this is one of those ones where you really wonder, like, is there a cultural difference that runs deep enough that you can say shh to the part of you that says, I want to know, I want to see, I want to hear. And
you think that ultimately there might be a culture? I don't know. Something part of me thinks that when it gets so easy to know the most intimate details about anyone, we'll all give in. I know there's part of me that just feels that way about humans.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to go with Robert on this one.
Well, I have to go with A-Lee.
Oh, me too.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
This piece was produced by Matt Kielty with Alex Young, reported by Alex and also Brenna Farrell. Thanks to our guests, Sukyung Kim, AJ Park, Leslie Tambako, Lee Myung-gu, Sarah Wolfgang, and very special thanks to our stringer and interpreter, Haryun Kang, Joseph Kim, Jeremy Bloom, Jian Choi, and the K-pop supergroup Crayon Pop, who happens to be on Alex's playlist, Spotify playlist, which also has like K-pop favorites from the entire staff. That's at radiolab.org.
Start of Messy.
Hi, it's Leslie Chimbaka. I was calling about the Radio Lab credits.
Hi, this is AJ from Snoopy.
Hi, this is Sibyl Kim calling.
I don't know if it's too late, but I'll just go ahead and leave you the... Here goes. Radio Lab is produced by Jada Bumrat. Our staff include
Simon Adler, Jenna Farrell,
David Cable,
Sue and Keith, Matt Keelty,
Robert Kowick, Andy Mills, Nikki Smither,
Chelsea Padgett, Ariane Wax, Molly Webster,
Jordan Wheeler, and Jamie York.
With help from Alexander Lee Young,
Tracy Hunt, Stephanie Tan, and Micah Lowinger.
Our fact checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris.
Yay, Radio Lab!
To hear the message again, press 2.
그러면 지금까지 크레오팜이었습니다. 감사합니다.
Bye bye.
Thank you.
End of message.